Welcome to the 162nd episode of the Monkeys Fighting Robots podcast. I'm Matt Sardo, and today we are going to angrily talk about Mr. Miracle 12 and the whole run of Mr. Miracle. Like, I'm going to angrily talk about it. You know, Tom King wrote it. Mitch Garrett, he drew a spectacular book. For some reason, I fell in love with Big Barda after the 12 issues. I don't really know exactly what was going on with that, but there's some crazy feelings going on with this book after it. But the editor-in-chief of Monkeys Fighting Robots, Anthony Composto, is joining me for this journey because he is a homer when it comes to Tom King and all things Tom King. So he is going to explain to me why this is an amazing book, and I'm going to try not to vomit in my mouth at the same time. I don't really know what's going on. Anthony, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm doing so much better than you. I mean, this has just been a fun 10 minutes that we've been on Skype before we started recording. You're clearly like beaten down at this point.
Well, it's been an interesting 48 hours or 72 hours because we were supposed to record this podcast Sunday night. And that was the original idea. And so I was like reading like the first issue Sunday night preparing. You know, I think it was like 3 hours before our podcast, I started reading. And then you were like, no, I really can't record tonight and stuff like that and everything like that. And I went out Friday night. My friends in St. Pete took me out for my birthday. I don't really give a shit. And then Saturday night, I had a hockey tournament. And the championship game was at like 1 o'clock in the morning. And I think I didn't get home until 3 o'clock in the morning. So it was two consecutive nights of not sleeping. And so I just drank a Red Bull, read the first issue of Mr. Miracle number one, and then you're like, yeah, I can't do the podcast tonight. And I was like, well, what the fuck am I supposed to do now? I really want to fucking just crash on my couch and just pass out, but I just chugged a Red Bull to read 12 issues of Mr. Miracle, and you flaked on me.
It's not quite how I remember it going down, but for the entertainment value of the podcast, sure, that's exactly how it happened.
You were like, hey, let's record on Sunday. And I was like, fine. But it'll have to be late. I don't know. It's fine.
You're writing history right now.
Well, yeah, you know, what's funny is I have a bigger microphone than you do. So I can rewrite history. My compliments were huge. I can't even do Trump. I'm not even trying it. We're not even talking about Trump right now. But I still
this
like
is gonna be fun.
I was still like, you know, hyped up on like candy and potato chips and Red Bull and still passed out Sunday night and woke up Monday. I was like, I really need to read some books and everything like that. And I was like, started reading some books and it's like, I get like five text messages. Stan Lee died. And I was like, son of a bitch. I was like, God damn it. And, but I really did love yesterday. Yesterday, you know, was an amazing day because everybody just shared their stories about Stan Lee, and I thought that was pretty amazing.
Yeah, it was a beautiful day in the comic book community.
Even beyond the comic book community, because like some people just know him from, you know, whether it's cartoons or movies or whatever. Like, I don't
think the pop culture community,
the pop culture community in general, like I just read tons of great stories about interactions with Stan Lee. And you know, the guy was amazing, and there's really nothing to say negative about the guy. I mean, like, it's just he was Stan Lee. He was this giant persona. He was, you know, he did, you know, brought all these amazing characters to life. And then he also like took the time to talk to tons of people throughout his life. You know, like you don't ever hear, like, I've always heard stories about Johnny Carson being a dickhead to somebody. Like, or Mickey Mantle being a dickhead to somebody. But I've never read or heard a story of Stan Lee being a dickhead to somebody.
Yeah. So I mean, there are, and again, man just passed away. And I think a beautiful thing of all the beautiful things yesterday was even all the people saying, like, listen, Stan was a man. He was a human. Like, he was flawed. You know, there's been a lot of stuff that, you know, goes around with his relationship with artists back in the days and whatnot. But even yesterday, people were just saying, like, he was a man, he had flaws, he had issues, but at the end of the day, he was a good person. And everyone just kind of focused on the positive and shut down anyone who tried to poke any holes. And I appreciated that.
No, but I mean, like, I even saw like Mike Norton post something. He's like, He's like, I want to be sad for somebody who just passed away, but like, how can you be sad for Stan Lee who passed away at, you know,
95 awesome years.
Right.
Like, I mean, that it's, yeah, it's sad, but it's also hard to be sad because, I mean, if anyone has a legacy that's going to endure, it's Stan Lee. I mean, the man literally built the foundation on which, like, our entire modern day pop culture platform has been built.
So it was kind of just like an Irish wake. Yesterday was like an Irish wake yesterday for Stan Lee.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was good. That was a good time. And
you know, he's you know, last few years people have noticed, you know, his health was deteriorating. He was getting old and stuff like that. So I think I don't think it was necessarily a surprise to a lot of people. And I think it's good that he's finally resting.
Yeah. No, because I don't think he would have rested. I think he would just kept going as long as his heart kept going. And you know, that's how some people, that's kind of how I live my life, man. I was playing a hockey tournament till 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm not even close to Stan Lee, but like, I definitely don't know the understanding of like turning the off switch off. And I don't think Stan Lee understood that either.
No, no.
And this segues into my Monday night when I was supposed to be like reviewing Uncanny X-Men number one and reading tons of Mr. Miracle to prepare for this podcast. And that didn't happen because, you know, we were writing all our tributes to Stan Lee and a couple of my friends from Chicago had a couple of cool tributes that I wanted to get on the website and everything like that. And it's really interesting because you got to see how Stan Lee affected people from like almost like a 360 degree angle. That's how I kind of talked about it, was like, you know, Stan Lee may have, you know, affected me from like a 90 degree angle, but he may have affected you from a 180 angle or like a 360 angle or whatever, you know, like he had a full spectrum of impact, whether you met the man or whether you, you know, just read his comic books and were influenced by what he did. But like there was a full spectrum of impact, and it was pretty damn amazing to see everybody's, like, I don't know, I want to say retrospective, but just, you know, that kind of just like little moment, like taking some time and being like, hey, this is what I really liked about somebody. And it was really cool. Yesterday was really cool. Today's been, you know, kind of cool with like what's been going on, and retrospectives have been hitting and stuff like that. So the guy lived a good life.
Put out a lot of positivity out into the world.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's just one of those things. And he will definitely be missed, and there will never, ever, ever be another Stan Lee I almost put him up there with Barnum and Bailey, you know, like where like the Barnum and Bailey brought like the circus. Yeah. And there will never be a Barnum and Bailey that brings like that kind of wonderment to the world. And I don't think that there'll ever be another Stan Lee who brings that kind of wonderment to the world either.
No, he was a one in a kind.
So now that we have all this like joy and like warm heartedness and like feelings going on, we are going to talk about Tom King's Mr. Miracle and the 12 issue run that wraps up tomorrow at your local comic book store.
Yes. Or today, if you're listening to this, because this is going live tomorrow, I'm guessing.
Well, we're recording Tuesday night.
Right.
So I'm trying to keep in the present. I'm going to post this at midnight, so it drops right then. So.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know, I mean, I'm hoping that our listeners are smart enough to understand how we're talking and be like, hey, he's not talking about today. He's not talking about tomorrow. He's talking about like Tuesday. Like, I think our listeners are smart, right?
I'm sure they are. I'm just a stickler for context.
Oh, really? Are you?
Really? Anyway.
Because there was a lot of glitches in the 12 issues of Mr. Miracle. So, I mean, who knows what the hell the context was of this series.
All right, let's get into it. Let's get it right into it then.
Yeah.
You kind of have an upper hand in this, as I was saying, because you just read all 12 issues sitting down like consecutively over the last couple of days.
What the hell were you doing over the past 3 days?
I was writing all the reviews that you weren't writing.
I heard you got a lot of trades of Marvel that you're very excited to write about.
No, they're in the mail heading your way.
Oh, man. All right, so the first six issues, I mean, I posted like my like little sketch pad of the 12 issues of like my thoughts and like little information. But the first six issues are basically the lead up for the story.
And let me just, we're doing spoilers. This is going to be a spoiler podcast.
Yes, it's a spoiler podcast. Like if you're listening to it, it's a spoiler. We're talking about the 12th issue of a 1 through 12 issue run of a book. I mean, like, I don't know how much else to say. Like, hey, you know.
No, I just want to give a fair warning up front that we're talking spoilers on this book. We are talking issue 12 and exactly how it plays out.
Yes. Yes. I mean, because does it really play out? Does it?
It does. It does. You want? Okay. You have your notepad. You're holding it up.
I'm on video. You're not. So I mean, it's one of those awkward moments where I'm just gonna eat Skittles the whole time.
You eat Skittles, but you have your notepad, so I'm gonna let you say what you were gonna say before I explain. Well, yes, it does make sense, and it is a perfect ending. But you read your little notepad and tell me about the first six issues like you were going to.
Fucking giant notepad, by the way. This is not a little notepad. No, I mean, the first six issues kind of set up the back half, where it kind of builds up the storyline, and then there's the reveal that Big Barda is pregnant, and things kind of build from there. You know, the main takeaway that I took away from the book is that life in hell was better than reality. So Mr. Miracle stayed there, which I wasn't the happiest with, but I kind of understand it.
But is that what it was?
Yeah. Because nobody bothered to explain anything.
So I don't know where your game plan was, but I'm just going to jump straight into this issue.
No, you jump right straight into 12, because I mean, we're going to talk about 12. I have 12 up on my computer right now. I'm looking at it. Yeah,
so you're saying that he's in hell or whatever. I mean, we have three different scenarios, right? He is visited first by Granny, who basically, and they're all glitch versions of characters who have died at this point in the series. I mean, Granny's basically saying that he's crazy. She says, you know, it's in your head. You're insane. You're making it up. Which basically was, to me, saying that he's in a Granny Goodness trap in the X pit or whatever, and he's fabricated this world. He's broken. He's gone insane, and this has been him escaping her. And then, you know, he meets up with the ghost of Forager, who tells him, yeah, you're in hell. And, you know, you had the chance to escape, and you didn't escape. And then he meets up with Orion, who's like, no, you're in heaven and you could have escaped and you decided to stay. So, I mean, they're all presenting different scenarios. We don't know what the true one is or if this is real. You know, then he sees Oberon in the end, who's just like, none of that shit's any more real than what you're going through right now. So I don't think you have an answer. I don't think he's necessarily in hell or in heaven or he's crazy or whatever. And moreover, to me anyway, what I loved about it, I don't think it fucking matters. I don't think it matters at all where he is. That's what the last two pages said to me when he's sitting on the couch with Barda. And to me, that's just a beautiful moment where he's talking about, he's thinking of everyone who's come before him and his son and everyone that's going to come after him and how insignificant and how small he felt. But again, I don't think that any of that matters because, as he said, like, you know, it's just he's – let me pull a quote. Where's the quote?
I'm going to quickly say, and I agree with you on that. Like, I mean, like, the last page is like whatever you just said. I mean, like, it doesn't really matter. Like, we're in this moment right now. It doesn't matter if we're in this world, that world, whatever. It doesn't really matter. We're in this moment in time right now and yada, yada, yada. Well, why the fuck did you waste my time for 12 issues?
He's not wasting your time. Here, this is the quote I was looking for, by the way. He's saying, I'm here, you're here, Jake's here, you know, and blah, blah, blah. And I just enjoyed it, seeing all of it, you know. So it's not a waste of time. It's a message is what it is. I mean, like, yeah, plot-wise, you don't know exactly what's going on yet because there's also a tease of more to come at the end.
Bullshit. But,
sorry. Otherwise, no, it doesn't give you a definitive answer, but that's not the point of the book. The point of the book is that the world is shit. you know, we all are faced, we're all trapped, we're all struggling, there's anxiety, depression, war, all this bad stuff going on. None of it, like, you know, matters. Just, you know, you have the people you love, you hold on to them, you focus on the here and now, and try to be happy, and, you know, don't let the largeness and the scope of it all kind of cave in on you. And I think that was the message of it.
You could have wrote that in one book.
It wouldn't have been as effective, though.
Yeah, I think it would have.
It wouldn't have been as fun and as beautiful. And it, no. wouldn't have developed it as well.
No.
Because it was a slow burn. Like, this, like, the book starts very grim. Scott tries to kill himself. It's very sad. But for me, anyway, as the book goes along...
And there's no point to him killing himself.
Huh?
There's no point to him killing himself.
Well, that's what started it all, man. That was the reflection of his state of mind and where he was. And that's what cast doubt over the whole story.
Okay, but then, the end, does it really matter that he tried to kill himself? And that in the last 8 panels, because panel number 9 is a tease for another series, like, does it really matter that Scott killed himself?
Yeah, because he was at a terrible low. First of all, for the point of the plot, it does, because that's where you get the whole thing for the anti-life equation and them saying that he was infected by it, and there's a whole section of the plot that was driven by that. But also just for his state of mind and where he's at and how he feels under the weight of everything and how he came back from that. Yeah, it's very important.
Do we know why he was sad and why he tried to kill himself?
I mean, he says that it was a stunt or whatever. But obviously, I mean, again, he's...
The answer is no.
He's trapped. He feels trapped. This is a book about all of us feeling trapped in the modern era.
Trapped by Big Barda, trapped by traffic in L.A., trapped by, Darkseid. I mean, like, what do we feel trapped by?
All of it. Except I wouldn't say Barda, because for me, Barda was his one salvation. I think that's the point of the book, is, like, you know, Barda, his kids, like, that's his salvation. But all of it, I mean, he feels trapped by being a superhero, by work, by life. The same thing that we all feel trapped by on a day-to-day basis. We feel trapped by our jobs. We feel trapped by society, societal pressures, politics. I mean, the news, like, we're living in an era where I think just everyone is a little bit more anxious, a little bit more depressed, and just kind of buckling under the weight of it all. That's what this book has been about. And we feel powerless through all of that. Like, you know, we all want to do something. We all feel like we need to do something. We all feel like we want to kind of break out. And I feel like a lot of people feel like they can't. And I think that's why Scott tried to, you know, that's why Scott tried to escape, why he tried to kill himself. And I think that was a very important part of it. Eating your Skittles.
I'm eating them really loud. I'm just like, I'm just gnawing on them. And I apologize.
I'm trying to ramble and let you give you time to chew and
swallow.
No,
it's fine. It's given. I apologize to the listener on this, but it's just because I'm looking at this last panel and I really think the last panel is beautiful and the relationship and everything like that. But, like, if you're good, and I like Tom King as a person, and I think he creates things, and I like Mitch as a person, and I like Clayton. I haven't met Clayton, so I don't really know him, but I like him as a creator. It's one of my biggest things that, like, when it comes to pop culture, whether it's cinema or TV or comic books, any scripted concept, when writers try to create bold concepts, crazy, you know, they just bold philosophical concepts, I feel like they hold back. And that's what I feel like with this one, that Tom King held back, where, like, he could have given answers. He could have been like, one of my biggest enjoyments in life is when somebody tries to show me what they think God is, because nobody knows what God is, or maybe a few people do know what God is or what God is like or whatever it is. But when I go to a theater and I see somebody, you know, or whether it's aliens, God or aliens, something we don't know about, something outworldly that we can't touch or don't see or don't really know. But like, I love watching somebody's interpretation of what God or aliens are like or are, because it's somebody coming up with a thought and being like, this is what I think's going on or whatever. And these are their influences and this is what their interpretations of aliens or God is. And with this book, we don't get that. We don't get what Tom King's version of God is. He stops right before the finish line, you know, and goes from there. And that's the one thing that kind of bothers me, is when people kind of stop. And there's that one movie with like Nicolas Cage and Meg Ryan, where he's like an angel and he gives up being an angel because he falls in love with a girl. And they meet and they fall in love, and Meg Ryan starts riding her bike and they show like a lumber truck. And I was like, those sons of bitches are going to kill Meg Ryan off. And then the movie takes a dark turn, and Nicolas Cage is like, well, you know, I would have given up being an angel anyway to have a few moments with this wonderful person. And I get that. But there was a point in time with the scriptwriter where they could have written a story where those people fall, Nicolas Cage and Meg Ryan, fall in love and have a happy ending. But they decided, like, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to go this way. And I'm like, fuck those people. Like, it's just like, I mean, like, I get it, but I don't get it. You know, I mean, like, there's a chance for, like, to inspire happiness and the battle for, like, true love and everything else. But they're like, no, we're gonna go take love in a darker direction. And this is where I still kind of feel the same way with it, where if the last 9 panels was Scott waking up from cutting his wrists because he wanted to fight to live, to be with Big Barda, to have that family that he had. You know, I mean, like, this is, you know, you could go the, what's the Christmas movie? Not Miracle on 42nd Street, but like the other one where the guy shows
It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a Wonderful Life. He could have went like a Wonderful Life at the end, and like that would have been brilliant too as well. You know?
See, just to backtrack on everything that you were just saying, as far as the God thing goes, I mean, these are the new gods, right? These characters are all the new gods. So he is showing God and the devil in a sense. I mean, this whole time, I mean, High Father is God. Dark Side is the devil. I mean, we've personally spoken with Mitch and Tom at conventions, and I've read interviews with them where they've stated that, like, High Father is God, Dark Side is the devil, both in the DC universe and just in this story in general. And I think we do have a really awesome, poignant moment in this issue where Scott literally punches God in the face, High Father, and just tells him, like, you know, fuck you. Because High Father's given him shit and he's treated him like shit. I mean, again, the nexus of this, as both Tom and Mitch have stated, is that Scott is a man. He's literally the son of God that was given to the devil and raised in the fires of hell. And now he has literally God coming to him and saying, just like, yeah, you weren't strong enough to make the decision that I made in giving up your son or whatever. And Scott literally punches him in the face and says, like, you're not, like, strong for doing that. And he tells God to go fuck himself. So I feel like we do have an awesome, poignant God moment in there, to me anyway. And as far as the love story goes too, like, I appreciate what you're saying, and I think that'd be an awesome ending too. He wakes up on the floor and, you know, he thinks of the vision that he just had and he wants to have that. But I don't think that, first of all, that's not the story that we got. And it's as simple as that. And in the story that we did get, I think it still ends on this was a very uplifting finale to me in a book that I think many people were expecting to end on a really down note. I think it was a very uplifting finale. It really celebrated love. It celebrated Scott and Barda's relationship. Barda was the star of the series, as far as I was concerned. Like, she really was the breakout uplifting character throughout the whole thing. She was the rock. So I got
it. Yeah, but it's all meaningless.
How? How is it meaningless?
Because you don't know what is real and what is not real.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it does.
I don't. that's the, I feel like the point of it is that it doesn't matter. He has her and he has his family and he's happy. And even Oberon
says it's a delusion. It could be a delusion.
You don't know that it is.
You don't know what it doesn't.
Okay. But again, that's not the point. You know it's not the point because it's exactly what Oberon says to him in those last pages where they're hugging. He's telling him, he says, that other world that Metron showed you, all those crises and continuities that never really make sense, that world full of superheroes who always end up hunky-dory, you think that's more real than that wife of yours, that kid, I mean kids, come on, sell me another, like, he's telling him, like, none of that, like, this is as real as it gets. And I think that's the point of it, is that this is real, is that this is our real world, right? I mean, like, you and me, we're regular guys, there's no superheroes in our world. You know, that things don't just end up hunky-dory like they do in comic books. And that's the world that Metron showed him, was, you know, the DC universe or whatever, where things most 9 out of 10 times end up okay. And he's saying, that's not real. Like, this is real. And whether Scott's world that we've been reading for 12 issues, whether that's real or not in this comic book, doesn't matter, because that's the real world as far as the reader is concerned, as far as you and I is concerned.
No, it's not, because the eighth panel is a glitch. There's glitches throughout this. So, like, the why would you, like, if you were, I guess if that was the point, like, why would you be fucking with us on the last panel of the page of, like, what is real and what's not real?
Maybe just so they could have a sick little sadistic chuckle about it.
Okay, is that, does that validate things then?
No, because I think it just drives home the point. I think just things are not always as they seem. And I think those glitches also just kind of, the same way that we saw the glitches of Granny and Forager and Orion and Darkseid sitting on the couch silently, I think, okay, Scott was depressed the entire series, right? And he grew the big beard, and I think that was a reflection of that in a way. Whether it was intentional or not, I mean, beards are typically a sign of depression. People stop taking care of themselves. They let their hair grow out. He shaves it at in this issue. And I don't think that means that he's not depressed anymore or anything, because that's not really something that you get rid of. But, you know, it ebbs and it flows, and you're up and you're down with your emotions. And clearly everything that he's just gone through, you know, he recognizes what he has, and he's feeling a little bit better about that. And he shaves the beard and he's a little bit happier in this issue. But all those glitches, Darkseid on the couch especially, I mean, they linger. Like, those things are all still there. Bad things are still there. You still, that crappy bad shit is going to be there. You'll probably hit another low at some point. And I think that's what that glitch represents, is that, like, you know, things aren't perfect. They're not, and they never will be. But, you know, you persevere and you persist, and you hold on to those that are close to you. Well, and this is just my interpretation, and I think this book is all about interpretation.
Which is fine. Which is fine that there's a lot of interpretation, but the fact that they, you know, they toss out tons of signals, and then of, like, what this could be, and what could be real and what could be not real, and then be like, and then at the end they're like, nah, nothing's really real. And I'm like, why are you wasting my time? I mean, like, it's at that point in time, I'm like, you know, you put up all this setup of glitches and visions and, you know, different worlds and bouncing back and forth through them. And, like, you know, like, am I in purgatory because I tried to kill myself? And am I trying to escape that? And what is the big grand escape of this or that? And I, you know, and then you get to the conclusion, you're like, oh, really? That's what we put at the end?
Maybe there's no answer. I mean, Tom might not even have an answer, you know? Maybe he didn't, maybe he doesn't, maybe he was just going with it, and maybe he just has his own interpretation of it, but not an answer.
Well, don't put your face in the comic book if you don't have an answer next to Raffi. He's just not right. Just don't do it.
Are we going to take a break real quick and just acknowledge how awesome those cameos on the first page are?
I mean, the Dan DiDio, Jim Lee, I got that. I got Raffi. I see Tom King. I don't know who the other people are, so you feel free to chime in with the rest of the people.
Well, are you... Okay, Raffi, can you just explain?
Raffi's from the League. If you don't know who Raffi is, just don't listen to my podcast ever again.
No, I haven't seen the league. I assume that you were either talking about Paul Scheer or Jason Mantzoukas because they're both in that panel.
Oh yeah, I mean, well, the league is because the whatchamacallit from the league, the guy with the gap tooth is the left room, the guy, the plastic surgeon.
Yeah, Paul Scheer.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that first. I mean, you got the whole Mr. Miracle team in there. You got Tom and Mitch, obviously Nick Darrington and Clayton Coles. You got the editors, Jamie S. Rich, Brittany Holzer, Jim and Dan DiDio, like you said, and then you got some podcasters that Mitch is a fan of, Paul F. Tompkins, Scott Aukerman, Adam Scott, and there's one female podcaster whose name escapes me, and there's two other DC employees whose name escaped me.
So what you're telling me is Tom King doesn't like us.
No, I mean, I don't think he's. Oh yeah, we're not on Earwolf is the problem. Mitch put in all Earwolf podcasters.
Yeah, it's podcasting is dying art form. Don't listen.
No,
it's not.
Don't say that. We're in the middle of a podcast right now.
Don't say.
But I will say. But I do want. I just want to acknowledge though, since we just went off on that tangent. Again, just celebrating the beauty of this book and what it meant to me. On that last page that you're talking about. One of my favorite quotes of this entire series are panels 4 and 5 on that last page.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah.
Because, I mean, this whole series has persisted with Darkseid Is. You know, it's been bleeding into the series. And for the record, there were no Darkseid Is panels in this entire issue. But Darkseid Is has been a representation of depression and anxiety and bad things seeping in, just popping up randomly. Not only was there no black Darkseid Is panel in this issue, but these two panels right here, you know, Scott's talking about how they don't have a remote. Their son accidentally stuck it in the dishwasher and it got, you know, destroyed and he wasn't able to get another one. And Barda says, well, Darkseid Is, which first of all is hilarious because they're flipping that. They're taking something that has been so dark and so menacing this entire series and using it in a comical way. In such a small way, they're dismissing it almost. And then Scott comes back and just says, "Yeah, I know, but we are too," which hit me hard, man. Because like Darkseid is literally all that means is, you know, bad things happen, bad things persist. And Scott's like, "Yeah, but so do we." And that sums up everything to me. That sums up the whole series. And then the other thing is in the middle of the book. There's that one splash page with the young boy who I assume is like a young Scott. And it's like, you know, the five images of him descending on the page.
Yeah, it's from the first issue.
It's from the first issue. Yeah, they brought it back from the first issue. And I will say just what confused me. I don't know if there's a hidden meaning here, and I don't know if we'll ever know or not. But in that first issue, when you see that, there's tape
over the eyes.
The boy's eyes. Yeah, and I never understood what that meant. It's not there now. So I don't know if that reflects anything, but...
And there was tape over whatchamacallit's eyes at the end.
Too. Oberon's, yeah.
Oberon's eyes. Like, we originally thought that, like, dead people had tape over their eyes or whatever we were conspiring at the time.
We were. And the tape never came back into play again. And, I mean, we see Oberon and this kid both in this issue, and neither one of them have the tape. But what I love is, you know, they're talking about what is the fourth world. And they're saying, you know, the first world is the old world. The second world is, you know, the new world. The third world is our world, you know, right now. And then he says, in the fourth world is my world, the world that I see when I close my eyes and try to escape. Like, and I love that too, because that's just, you know, that's the future. That's the ideal, the beautiful future that, you know, we're trying to build and put out there for people. Like, that's the fourth world. That's the future, this utopia almost that, you know, you close your eyes and you try to escape the badness and the shit. And the anxiety and the depression, and you think of this good world. And maybe that's what this is. Maybe this is him, because that vision, that splash page comes while Scott has his eyes closed. He's laying down with his son on his chest, and he closes his eyes, and he sees that, and the next panel is him opening his eyes. So, again, we don't know, and I don't think we need to know, but maybe this is just him closing his eyes and just picturing a better world. But those two moments really stuck out to me in this issue.
I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm a parent and I don't have time for for this kind of thing right now, where I'm just like, we got to find ourselves, blah, blah. And it's like, because parenting, you don't have time to find yourself. It's just, you're on call 24/7. So like this, you know, kind of self-referential kind of like, you know, waiting for Godot kind of thing. And then it gets to a point where you're like, we're not really going to, you know, get to where we want to go. And I'm just like, seriously?
I mean, not only does Tom King have children of his own, but Mitch Garrett's had a child in the middle of working on Mr. Miracle.
No, and that's fine. Everybody's parenting is a different experience, the same way I talked about Stan Lee and everybody else's experience. You know, and I mean, and when it comes to having kids, you know, the different ages that you are, like, I didn't have a fucking kid until I was old because, like, I wasn't fucking responsible to do that shit. Like, you know, now it's like, you know, these people have to survive. Like, that's my job, is for them to not, you know, die. Like, I mean, most people have that in them, but like, it's like, serious, like, this is my responsibility and stuff like that. So, I mean, a few issues back when, you know, Mr. Miracle was like, well, maybe we should train. I was like, fuck you, dude. Like, no dad would ever be like that. And that's, you know, that's where it probably started to lose me on that.
I don't think he was ever going to give up his son.
Okay, that's fine. When you have a kid, go back and read this and then see where you think, you know, scot-free is on that conversation.
That's a great idea. And I think that's a great reason. I think that's great that you and I, you know, are partners and we podcast and stuff like that, because we come at things from such a different angle. I mean, I'm 26 years old and I, you know, don't have kids. You have kids, you're an adult, you're a homeowner and stuff like
you're
that.
You're an adult too. You're an adult too. I'm not saying you're not an adult.
No, I know I'm an adult. I know I'm an adult.
You're just straight edge.
I'm not a straight edge, but we have different life experiences. And I think that's what makes, you know, our conversations so interesting. And this is a series that I own all 12 issues. I'm going to buy whatever deluxe hardcover, absolute edition, whatever they put out there, I'm going to buy. And it's something I'll revisit at times in my life. And I will gladly see how my perception of it changes in the different stages of my life. And I'm sure it will.
See, for me, like, I really loved Mitch's work throughout the whole entire book. Like, it, some things ebbs and flow and some things change. And there was a few glitch panels where, like, my head was spinning where I was like, is he trying to do like a Jack Kirby doing the glitches on certain characters? And, you know, again, since I like had them all out at the same time, you know, I was like really looking for the hidden meaning of what was going on, or the answer or the mystery or whatever. And, you know, for it to come with that 9 panels at the end, I'm kind of like, and then to kind of like also to read this book the day after Stan Lee dies, and then they have a Stan Lee caricature in the book, I was like, I don't know how I feel about that either. I don't think
Funky Flash. I know you're talking about. That's Funky Flashman.
Right. But it was, it's a direct rip. It's a parody. It's a parody of Stan Lee.
Yeah. Well, that's a Jack Kirby creation. They're all Jack Kirby creations.
I get that. I understand that.
They didn't know Stan was going to die right before the book came out.
I get that. But I mean, like, the guy is, you know, he was 95. I mean, like, if it's, you pull your punches whenever you can, I guess. I don't know. But I
don't feel like there's a punch. I mean, I feel like they're honoring and celebrating Stan just as much. I mean, I don't think Funky's weird, because didn't Funky die like halfway through the series and come right back?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was it. But I mean, well, after he came back and he became like Jack's babysitter, I mean, there was nothing bad or negative about Funky.
Okay. You either take the character as it comes out from the beginning and bring all that baggage from the first issue, or you just look at it as the last issue and you're like, oh, they were nice to him in the last issue. It's, you know, I mean, it's, but they were still wrote the first other 11 issues. So I mean, like, you got to bring it all together. I mean, like, you can't just be like, oh, they were nice to him in the last issue. They weren't, like, picking on him then. Looking at Oberon, it looks like in one of the last panels he does have stuff over his eyes. Like, page 22 of 24. It's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the 6th panel. They darken out his eyes. and go from there.
Yeah, he does. He does have that piece of tape on there.
So, I mean, again,
I don't know what that means. And I
you will not know what anything means in this book, and that is the problem.
I'm fine with that. Like, I love ambiguity in comics and film and TV and stuff like that. I mean, like, it's still something that I'd love to, you know, if we ever talk to Mitch again, that's probably the one thing I'd ask him is, what's up with the tape? And honestly, his answer probably would be, well, what do you think's up with the tape? And I would be fine with that. And then we could have a discussion about it, and it would be great. I don't need an answer.
Good for you.
Oh, there, it's back, ladies and gentlemen. It's back. Did you miss it?
I really wanted to go hard with it. I was like, I can't be that mean right away. I just can't be that mean.
You could be mean. You came to me last week. I wasn't even on the show last week.
You came to my birthday party. I can't be mean to you. I can't be mean to you.
We had a great time.
It was fun. It was fun. It was a good time. Can't wait till next year. But I don't know. You're gonna have to go watch City Slickers. That's what you're gonna have to do.
That's what you're comparing this to City Slickers?
Yeah, I'm totally comparing this to City Slickers, and that's where I'm going with it.
I know of City Slickers. I don't if I've seen it. It's been a long.
It's
time,
my
so philo-
it's my philosophical movie. And I know you'll be like, what? That's a philosophical movie? Yeah, it is. But there's a few little pieces. I mean, like, there's, you know, Billy Crystal's character is depressed. And he goes and, you know, becomes a cowboy. And then, you know, he finds out that the meaning of life is one thing. And that one thing is different for everybody else. But he finds out what his one thing is during his, you know, mancation with his buddies. And, you know, and
it's the same thing, though.
It's different for everybody else. But I mean, like, that's, I don't know.
Scott found his one thing in his family.
Yeah, but he still wanted to give up his kid. He wanted to have a conversation about giving up the kid. Whether he was like, hey, you know, had a theory in it, but like, I was thinking, Big Barda was like, fuck you, we're not giving up our kid. Like, she was
think about it again, if you think about Mr. Miracle as one big metaphor and commentary on mental health and depression and anxiety, it can bring you to, and I think I wrote this in a review of that issue, when they're bargaining and he's weighing his options, it can bring your mind to some really dark places and have you considering some really dark options, and it can have you rationalizing things that are wholly irrational. And in that case, you need someone in your life like he has Barda that can bitch slap him and say, hey, your brain is broken again. Like, this is insane. And you kind of snap back to reality. To quote the great.
Yeah, but we don't know what reality is. We don't know what reality is in this book.
Whatever this reality is, this is reality to them right now as far as it's concerned. So when I say bring him back to reality, it's this reality I'm talking about.
We don't know what reality is.
But in the context of this example, you know, so yeah, he might have been briefly considering giving up his son. But again, sometimes, dark side is. And it forces you to consider some really...
Like, I was even traveling down a path where, like, the baby was scot-free. And I was like, oh, this could be some, like, crazy shit where, like, life just repeats itself. Where he's just kind of going there. But they didn't go there. They went in a different direction.
They went there and he took a different path. Like, it was the same exact situation that his father was presented. Give me your son and we'll end this war. His father said, sure, take my son, I'll take yours. Scott said no. And they fucking killed the devil in the process. And then he punched God in the face.
Metaphorically.
Well, obviously, the whole comic's a metaphor.
No. Because you could actually really punch God in the face if you want to. I mean, like,
well, he did. He punched High Father in the face.
Yeah, but High Father was already dead. Like, he's like a little shadow puppet at that point in time. Like, High Father was dead.
God is dead. Nietzsche. Boom.
You know. And so he punches a hologram, you know. So I'm not giving full credit for punching God because it was a hologram. I'm trying to think of what else I wanted to say about this one. The kid eats hot dogs. I don't know about that one. For me, why do they have a car with the steering wheel on the wrong side? Like,
I mean, those exist.
I understand they exist, but why? Just looking through my list of everything.
I want to go to a positive because you haven't been necessarily railing on this book. You haven't been bashing it or anything like that. But
no, it's a philosophical book. Do I feel like it gave me everything I wanted from a philosophical book? No. Could that be the whole point of the book? Yes. Does it piss me off? Yes.
I want to ask you, because at the top of this show you mentioned something, and it was one of my favorite parts of the book too. So we can agree on this. You said that this book made you fall in love with Big Barda.
Yeah, I mean, she is one of the likable characters. She's one of the rocks. She's the rock to the story. You know, where Mr. Miracle's all over the place, Big Barda is a constant and everything. And they do, I mean, again, I don't really want to talk about comic books like this, but you know, she is a very compassionate, you know, and there's some there's definitely sexual tension between these characters and just the way that Mitch draws her and the caring and the compassion, it's a complete, yeah. Big Barda is a complete package.
And she's fucking tough. I love that she can slap the shit out of him. And I love how in multiple situations he'll be venting and going off on some dark, sad monologue. And she just sits there looking at her phone or just listening to him. And he'll be just be venting and monologuing. And when he's done, she'll just be what's on TV? I like that because she listens and she processes and she tries not to dwell on it with him. And when he needs a shoulder to cry on, she's there, but she's also the one to just kind of show him that you know, life's just going to go on and we're going to get through this. And I like that. I really like that bit about her just kind of, you know, well, what's on TV? Yeah, that's you rant and rave and all that other stuff. What's on TV? I like that.
If we're going to the mundane, you just went with, I did like how they treated the boom tube like Uber. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
I thought that was it's okay. If we're going to start playing this whole new gods and our world and this fantasy world of war and everything else, but the whole conversation about the boom tube will be here in 4 minutes. The boom tube, oh, it'll be here in 6 minutes now. It's a straight up Uber conversation. Things on my list. The paranoid pill. What did we ever really establish that, or what was going on with that?
Refresh my memory.
It was back in issue 3 that they talked about Orion or Darkseid giving Mr. Miracle the paranoid pill. And then it never comes up ever again.
They're saying that he was infected by the anti-life equation, and that's what made him kill himself or try to kill himself.
Okay, that's fine. I do like the callback to the veggie tray. I thought that was one. I thought the birthing scene was good, was really good, because that was that's a very trying. When they birthed the kid, I thought that was straight up what you go through in when you give birth to a kid. And then when they couldn't find anything to cut the umbilical cord and he just magically happened to have a sword to cut an umbilical cord, the magical umbilical cord, I thought that was a pretty amazing moment.
I love the heart monitor in that issue.
Yeah. And how it kind of goes off. And then when you don't, as a parent, and you don't hear the heart monitor, you start to freak out. You're is my baby dead? It's immediately is my baby dead? And then the nurse is oh no, you'll be fine, blah, blah. But you're we'll find the fucking heartbeat if everybody's fine. It's straight up you go straight to darkness, you know, when you're giving birth to a kid. So until the kid comes out, you're in the darkest, darkest place ever. And then once the kid comes out, you're in the happiest place ever. So just be prepared for that. Good luck. You know, happy birthday. I don't really know. That's what it is. And then in issue 8, when they had when they were going through parenting, but they were also going through war. Parenting is war. Like, you know, you got to have your team. You got to have your team mm-hmm. of mother and father. And I thought that was like a really good issue or episode, you know, when they're going back and forth and they're planning, you know, all the things. And they're just like, God, I just really want this kid to sleep. And we just got to like battle through it and all this other stuff. And then like they're actually going through battles at the same time. That was kind of good. Episode 9. I wasn't really sure what the point of the Da Vinci being gay thing was. I don't know if this was something new that came out in the world that I didn't realize happened, but that was kind of weird. And this is where you're like, listen, you just talk. I won't talk anymore, Matt.
You have your notepad out and you're listing things. So I didn't know if you were just going to keep going or if I was interjecting.
Yeah. I mean, you can interject. It doesn't matter. It's a live. So we're recording this live.
Yeah, no, I mean, you can keep right. Oh, yeah, I mean, that issue with the peace talks on Apocalypse and the pissing in the pit and stuff like that. Again, I'm not saying that I understood everything or every metaphor throughout the series. I do love the mundanity of it and the parallels that issue that you were talking about with, you know, parenting in war was really effective. And yeah, I mean, the whole book's a metaphor, man. The whole book's a metaphor.
I did like, though, because they had the conversation about the master and the apprentice and the paintings. And I thought that was a good story. And that had a punchline where I was like, oh, snap. Like, that's a burn. That was a straight up burn by the master. I was like, oh, man, you got burned.
Yeah. That issue was interesting. And it was kind of strange. And again, it just kind of goes, and again, you're talking, those issues are really effective too, because, you know, you're talking with, about Tom King, who was a man who was in the CIA and, you know, he was in war and he was in the Middle East and stuff like that. And those issues were really effective in a way that, you know, you saw Scott, who is this emotional wreck this entire series, and he's now leading his nation, for lack of a better word, and he's in these peace talks and he has to be this tough son of a bitch. And he's like yelling with Kalibak and they're fighting. And you know, like you see him back at the room with Barda and he's cowering and he feels broken. And that scene in the mirror was super effective, that issue. And just kind of goes to show that even if you're broken emotionally, you know, your day has to go on. And, you know, especially if you're in a position like Scott is, you have to kind of just put on a brave face and get through it. And then, you know, If you got to collapse when you go home, you collapse, but you got to, you know, get through it in those moments. You know, I feel like every you calling each issue an episode is really effective. That's what it felt like to me. I mean, like every issue really felt like an episode of really good TV where it's one grand story, but each issue almost had kind of its own story within a story with its own little message, its own little moral. And that was one of the most effective of the entire series for me.
I mean, I when you were saying, talking about the episode, I would love to see this as, I love the concept of the just average life and then the absurdity of new gods where they're battling in war. And it would bounce back and forth between like, hey, did you pick up the groceries and yada, yada, yada. And then they're like, oh, we got to fight Darkseid and blah, you know, go from there. Like, I would love to see this play out on a big screen. I think this script wise would be something pretty phenomenal. And I think, honestly, I think it would have a better payoff cinema wise because you would have bonded with these characters. You would see the expressions on their faces. And I'm not taking anything away from Mitch, but like, you know, when it's three dimensional, you get a little bit more out of it. So I think maybe that couch conversation might have a little bit more closure to it, I guess. And you're like, no, I don't really see it at all.
No, I mean, it totally landed. The whole comic landed for me in print. But obviously, I would love to see this in a series in some way or a movie. I would love it.
I mean, I think with 12 issues, I think it's long enough for like a 2.5-hour movie at this point in time. I think it has. I really wouldn't like mess with the script at all. I would just do it verbatim what you see. And I think it would be pretty amazing.
Yeah. Even well, I mean, we're getting a New Gods movie, so.
Yeah, I don't think you'd get this one.
Oh, no, this is not the New Gods movie we're going to get.
This is not the New Gods movie you get. Because there's just way too many questions for the general public. But What are we at? We're at like 50 some minutes on this thing right now. 55. What do you give me your grade on what you're giving the series and what you want on this book?
You're gonna get mad at me, but
I'm not gonna get mad. You love this book from the beginning. Like I think you gave the grade before you even read the book.
That's not true, but
it's pretty true. It's like
five out of five, man. This issue, this whole series is a 5 out of 5 series for me. It's one of my top all time series.
Yeah. I can't give it that much. I mean, like, I expect more from Tom King. I really do. And I don't mean, again, I really like the guy. I just expect more from him. And I guess, and if that's the thing is, it's, I mean, because this book is not going to keep me up late at night being like, oh man, what did that book mean? Or what did that thing mean? Or what did that mean? Like the Killing Joke kept me up late at night because I was like, well, what does this mean? Like, how does that mean? Like, what is going on here? Like, and I was like so emotionally like distraught after that book where I was like deranged forever. And I'm trying to think of another book that would have like kept me up at, you know, as much as it did. And I mean, I think the other book is probably, you know, One More Day for Spider-Man is probably the most recent one that kind of like really messed me up. But I think there was like I really enjoyed like the Ultimate Captain America that Jason Aaron did, where Captain America fought Duke Nukem or Nukem or whatever his name is. And they had a real conversation. They had a real conversation about Vietnam. And I was like, oh man, you're hitting some topics there. And you're like, you know, you're challenging the norm and stuff like that and stuff. So, I mean, like there have been some books since A Killing Joke that have pushed the envelope of like my emotions and my feelings and everything like that. And this one, I was just like, ah, like I felt like he was right on the edge of doing that. And he just didn't do it for me. Not saying it's a bad book. It's just not my cup of tea. It's not my cup of tea. As Daniel Tiger's mom would say,
you're entitled to that, man. You're entitled. I'm not gonna bash you for it. I mean, you're not bashing the book, and you're giving it the props that you can. It was a 5 out of 5 for me. Wasn't for you. That's fair. But what is it? What's your number?
I mean, again, it's always been a well written series. It's always been a gorgeous book to begin with. So I mean, like you're at least at a 4 right there. I mean, like as far as quality, it's a quality book. So, I mean, it's probably somewhere between like a 4.25 to a 4.5 because it is definitely a quality book. And Tom is trying to push the envelope on a few conversation pieces, but he just doesn't, you know, bring it home on the last page for me.
What I will say for you, I would highly recommend. I mean, obviously I've recommended The Vision to you before. That's Tom King. But I would definitely recommend Sheriff of Babylon. That's Tom and Mitch, their previous collaboration before Mr. Miracle. And that is true life. That is not superhero stuff. That is, you know, and it's taken directly from, you know, Tom King's experiences in the CIA. That is, you know, Middle Eastern military type stuff. It's brutal. It's great. It's balls to the wall. And it's intense. You might want to give that a chance. I mean, if Mr. Miracle came that close for you and just didn't, you know, came close to the finish line and didn't quite get there, maybe Sheriff will push you to that point.
And I'm trying to think of like, because there was the Batman book, the, what was it, the Joker versus the Riddler. I'm blanking on the name of that book.
The Joker versus the Riddler. Recent?
Yeah.
Oh, War of Jokes and Riddles.
And I don't think that paid off for me either.
See, I like that. I really like the ending of that too.
Again, and so then we go into the most recent Tom King big blockbuster book, and I was just like, I'm not gonna get what I want out of this book. So I was like, do I even like, you know? I mean, again, I'll continue to read it, but I'm like, now I'm prepared for a very open ending to a story, which is gonna really piss me off. Because then you're messing with superheroes and continuity and people living or dying. And
Yeah.
You know,
well, we'll
like
see.
That.
I mean, you know, the very last panel does say, you know, it's new and thrilling. No, successor will soon be on sale.
I'm talking about Heroes in Crisis. I'm not talking. We're past Mr. Miracle by now.
Oh, you've moved on. You've moved.
Yeah,
on.
Yeah. I've moved on. We're talking about Heroes in Crisis, and
yeah,
and if that's an open ended book with actual heroes dying, that is, you can't stand for that stuff. You got to be like, hey, that's just.
I think Heroes is such so much more closely tied to the main DC books that they're not gonna be doing that. I think we'll have a much more clear answer by the end of Heroes.
If Dan DiDio kills off Wally West twice, I mean, heads will need to roll.
They will roll. I just want to know what their next series is after this, whatever they're teasing. I'm thinking maybe since this issue is being released this week, maybe we'll get an announcement this week as far as what the next project's gonna be. But I don't know. Maybe
yeah,
they're waiting until Heroes is over.
I'm trying to think. Like, I don't think I got enough from Scott Free to really want to, like, continue reading him. And I guess that's the biggest tale, is that, like, there wasn't enough about his character, whether, you know, there wasn't enough likability or relatability with Scott Free to where I'm like, oh, I really want to, you know, keep up with this character. And whether it's, you know, that the fact that he was like broken and always like fragile through most of it and kind of just going through the motions or whatever. Again, like we both talked about how like, oh, Big Barter stole the show, or like, you know, I pseudo fell in love with Big Barter through this comic book. Like, you know, like he's not the alpha male in the book to kind of like rally you behind him.
I don't think he needs to me. I didn't need him to rally behind it. Like for me, Scott was just my entryway. Like I related to Scott. Like I saw myself in Scott and I kind of connected to the book via Scott. I wasn't looking to him to be like he was a vehicle more than anything else. Like I wasn't necessarily looking for him to be like this, like, you know, whatever you want to call it. I mean, by the end though, he is the one that came to the realization, and you know, he's the one who shaved his beard and was just like, you know, all that stuff doesn't matter. Like, you know, what matters is here and now and me and you, and we're real and we're here. So he did have that realization in the end, which again, if we're supposed to see ourselves in Scott, that just reaffirms the fact that, like, you know, we can see that too and we can have that too. So
yeah, but Barta came to that realization in issue one.
Because she's amazing. And she's smarter than he is.
Even Barta would be like, yeah, we don't need 12 issues of this.
Because she's smarter than he is.
So?
I say this so cavalier because I relate to their relationship so hard. Like I see mine and Brooke's relationships in their relationship. And I know that Brooke would be the same way. I would spend 12 issues lamenting and like fretting and being sad and bummed out Within issue one, Brooke would be the one being like, yeah, no, like, get over it. Come on.
Well, I think like, there's a lot of guys who, like,
not that you're telling me to get over it. Like,
lots
like,
of guys who talk about, like, something important to them, and their girlfriend or wife is just sitting in the bed texting, and they're just like, whatever. Like, it's not that they don't care, but, like, I saw that pose multiple times throughout the issue, and I was like, yeah, it's totally my wife. That is totally my wife. And I'm sure, like, I could show that picture to 100 other men who are like, yeah, that's totally my girlfriend. That's totally my wife. That's totally, like, I feel like that is just a standard female pose of like when a guy is talking about something that's just not interesting or just not, you know, whatever.
I don't care about it. Yeah. No, that's Brooke when I talk about Mr. Miracle and comic books and stuff like that. But just like Barta, like, you know, Barta's there when she needs him, and Barta's consoling him in that sad granny goodness mirror. And just like I'm sure Margo's there for you and Brooke's there for me, and men are there for their wives and wives are there for their husbands and husbands are there for their husbands and wives are there for their wives. Like, you know, it's beautiful. And it's a sign of how close they are.
All right, guys. I got nothing else to say about this book because I'm just still like, I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to think about it more or if I'm just going to shut the door. I'm going to like, it all depends on when I go to bed tonight, if I'm going to be like thinking about Scott Free and his decisions and what goes on, whether or not this is a book that I'm going to like care about Or if I go to bed and I don't think about Scot-Free at all, and I like wake up like a week later, or just, you know, a week later, and I was like, oh yeah, that Mr. Miracle book came out. Like, that is where like my like final decision on this book is gonna like come out. I think Mitch did an amazing job with art, as constrained as he was with the 9-panel grid. My final shot at the 9-panel grid.
Almost made it to the whole podcast.
I almost did. But it'll be interesting to see how this book resonates with me. Because again, I read the first issue Sunday night and kind of just read, you know, 11 issues today. And there's a lot of motion going around with Stan Lee passing away yesterday and everything. So, I mean, like, it's been an emotional time. So I feel like this would have been the perfect time to read Mr. Miracle, you know, reread. Because I read the first 6 issues because we did a halfway point podcast. But I wanted to reread everything so I didn't miss anything.
I'm just glad that we got the pod back and going in time for the finale.
I don't know, man. Skype didn't like you too much. It was like, nope, we're not going to do it.
We got it done.
So, but so basically what I want to say is like, if you like Mr. Miracle or you didn't like Mr. Miracle, shoot us a message, whether it's on Twitter, Facebook, or in this podcast below, or Blog Talk Radio, or on the website, or wherever you can find a message board to send us a message about Mr. Miracle. Send us a message, because I really want to know how this book is resonating with everybody else in the world, so that I'm not stuck in my little bubble of, you know, whatever it is, and, you know, because I mean, like, I think that Anthony and I are on completely different worlds sometimes, and that's fine. I'm not saying it's wrong, but I would like to talk to somebody in the middle. Like, and they would like to talk to somebody in the middle where it's like, I'm over here, Anthony's over there. Like, we need a mediator sometimes, you know, with what we talk about. And I'm hoping that the people that listen to this podcast can be the mediator and kind of tell us what they liked and what they didn't like about Mr. Miracle. So, but Anthony, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me. Always a pleasure.
Hi, man. I'm Matt Sardo. This is Monkeys Fighting Robots, and you guys enjoy your week, and I will talk to you next week with more comic books.
Excelsior!